In Haiti was I born as a slave. More than 150 years in the past, with a power I do not fully understand. I am known as Jean-Pierre Desperrois, and Destiny, she calls my name. Chapter 12, Secrets of the Red Sect. The blood of Madame Delacour, I taste it on my lips. It drips from my face, it covers my hands, it makes sticky and wet the front of my clothes. I wipe my hands on my trousers, but already the blood, it dries, and I need more than the cloth of my pantalon to clean them. As best I can, I wipe my face with the side of my forearm. Now, there are two dead slaves, two dead dogs, and the dead wife of a slave owner. The dogs and the slaves, perhaps they would not be missed so much. The wife, on the other hand. Why do these creatures get in the way? It is as if they beg me to kill them. Now they have their wish, no? I breathe deeply to calm my nervousness. I wish for the healing draught of Mockendahl to clear my mind, but like a fool, I have not brought a skin of it with me. I must do something about these five bodies, but what? My breath, it catches short. Lover, he is expected at any moment. I am in the hallway. Patrice and Franz, they have not moved from the door. They have not even heard a sound. The eyes of Patrice, they grow wide when they see me. Even in the dim light, they can see I am covered in blood. I hold my finger to my lips, and I grab the arm of each man to pull him into the bedroom. I close the door behind us where there is a chance we can whisper and not to be heard. As soon as the door shuts, Patrice, his eyes wide, says, Mon Dieu, Jean-Pierre, what have you done? Shut up! Shut up! Give me a chance to think. But there is no chance to think. The doorknob, it turns again, and a voice, it whispers through the cracked opening into the darkness.
Bonsoir, ma chérie.
Again, my body, it moves more quickly than my mind. My right hand, it grabs the pistol from the belt of Patrice, while my left hand, it pulls the man through the door by the throat. With my left arm, I hold him tightly around the neck. My right hand, it presses the barrel of the pistol against the temple of the head of this man. I shove my left hand to his nose. That is the smell of blood, I whisper to this man in French. Make one sound, and it will mingle with yours. The man, he goes limp in my arms. Franz, I say in Creole, take this man to the back of the house. To the white man, I say in French, one sound from you, and it will be your last. I feel Franz to take the man from me, and as he does, a plan, it forms in my mind. There is a good reason I have not killed this man. He may just be our savior tonight. My hands, they feel across the surface of the dressing table. I do not find the thing for which I look. I pull the drawer to be open and reach in it. Here it is, a flint. I feel my way around the bed to where I know there is an end table. It is my hope to find a candlestick there, and I do. I strike the flint and light the candle. My eyes, they take only a moment to adjust to the brightness. Patrice, he stands next to the door. His mouth, it hangs open, staring at the body on the bed. I signal him to be still. I cannot help but admire my work. The body of Madame Delacour lies on the bed in a puddle of its own blood. Her neck, it is open from ear to ear, like a good neck should. The blood, it is stopped to pour from the throat. There is no blood to pour. The blood, it is now on the sheets, on the floor. There is even some on the ceiling. Her eyes, they are still wet and wide. Her mouth, it is still open to scream. I have done good work with this one. No, I shake my head. What am I doing? There is no time. I can only hope that no one from the house awakens in the next 15 minutes. If no one discovers us by then my plan, it will have worked. Against another wall sits a small desk for the writing of letters. With one hand, I grab a piece of paper, the bottle of ink, and the quill. With the other, I hold a candle. I signal Patrice to wait here. Now, in total silence, as I have trained, I move out of the room, down the hall, down the stairs, and out of the house where, from the faint light of the candle, I can just make out Franz on the grass just beyond the back porch, holding the arm of the white man, who wears nothing but a dressing gown. In his other hand, Franz holds his pistol to the head of this man. I place the candlestick, paper, pen, and ink on the floor of the back porch. The paper, it is now stained with the blood from my hands. All the better. I signal to Franz to bring the white man to me. The white man, he trembles as they walk. I make him to kneel before the paper on the porch. I whisper to him, Right, what I tell you. He hesitates, but France presses the gun against the nape of his neck. The man, he gets the hint. He picks up the quill, dips it in the ink. I dictate. Monsieur Delacour, I've given up all hope. I loved your wife, but she threatened to reveal our secret. Two slaves and the dogs, they tried to stop me from entering the house as if they knew my plan. I took care of them as I took care of your wife. Do not look for me. You will not find me. He has been to tremble and to weep as he writes. Several tears, they smudge the ink. All the better. It makes the letter to look more real. I tell him to sign his name. He does. Marcel Tremblay. An appropriate name for this man under the current circumstance. He is quite natural at the trembling. I race up the stairs with a letter, quill, and ink. I become expert at climbing these stairs and walking this hallway in silence now. I place the letter, quill, and ink on the desk. I put the candlestick back on the end table and blow out the candle. I pull Patrice out the door with me. Now, back down to slice the throats of the two poisoned dogs to make it look as if this Marcel Tremblay is the one who killed all five. The blood from the dogs, it does not flow because their hearts do not beat. I pick up one dog by the hind legs and shake it up and down to let the blood to pour from its throat. Now the other dog, up and down, there. Isolée Danto, she is nowhere to be seen. So, now, holding Marcel at gunpoint, we have moved back toward the forest. I hear the voice of Macandal. The Loi are on our side tonight. We slow down when we get to the trees. It is dark here in the forest, and it would be hard enough for us to walk on our own, but we also now hold a white man at gunpoint. We have retraced our steps exactly, and are at the creek at which I doused the torch. All the events of the evening have made me to forget the heat and humidity, but now that we are past danger, I cannot help but notice that once again I am covered in sweat and dirt and now blood. The blood, it attracts the mosquitoes. I struggle to ignore them. Patrice, he picks up the torch and he lights it. I see the face of Marcel clearly for the first time. It is a strange burnt mark over his left eyebrow, a burnt mark that resembles the head of a horse. Have I seen this burnt mark before? No, I've never set eyes on this man before. But still, that burnt mark, it looks so familiar. The bright light of the torch must illuminate me for him, too, because his eyes, they grow wide. I must look terrifying to him. This still fresh scar across my face, my skin and clothes covered in the blood of his lover. He panics. He struggles against the grip of France. But it is no use. He tries to cry out, but the hand of France is over his mouth still, and the pistol is raised to his neck. The man, he stops his thrashing, but his eyes bulge out of his head. I do not know what comes over me. I take one step toward him. He shrinks away. I lean towards him as if to tell him a secret. I lean closer. France holds him tight. My face is in his face. I open my mouth to speak. Booga, booga. France and Patrice, they both burst out to laugh. It is funny, no? I explain my plan to the two men. We will use one of the pistols of Macandal to shoot Marcel in the temple, then place the pistol in his hand. When the body is found, they will think he shot himself. Mystery solved. We escape unknown. In the chaos, the necklace, it will not to be missed, and the blame does not go to the slaves. A perfect plan. But Patrice and France do not agree. While Marcel weeps in self-pity, knowing that he has only a few minutes left to live, and there's nothing he can do about that, Franz says,
"We must save him for the Loi."
I look at him with new eyes. Do I hear him right? A sacrifice for the Loi? Very interesting. But if we do not leave the body to be discovered at a search party, they will not to find the body, and they will keep to search. They will search the forest, and sooner or later, they will find our camp. If we leave the body here, they will stop to look. But the thought of a human sacrifice for the Loi, this thought, it tantalizes me. Perhaps Destart, it goes against my better judgment, but now the seed of Destart has been planted, already it grows, and I cannot help myself but to agree that this, perhaps, this is the better plan. Why not? We're to kill him anyway. Why not sacrifice him to the Petit Roi? Surely they will appreciate such a gesture from us mere human, no? Surely then they will protect us from the white men.
I lean closer to Marcel to whisper to him again, Booga, booga.
His eyes, they stream with tears. I wet my lips. My tongue, it touches dried blood. It tastes of a sweetness. And something else, too. What does this taste? But of course, it is the taste of salt.
The way back through the forest to the camp of Macandal seems much shorter than the way we came. We can hear drums in the distance. Through the trees, there is a light that becomes more and more bright. At first, it seems as if perhaps the sun it rises early, but as we approach, I can see that the camp is lit up by festive flames, and the drums, they grow louder. The trees break, and the camp, it is revealed to us. Forming a large circle around the central clearing of the camp, more than a dozen poles stick up from the ground, each lit up as a torch. Between each of the poles sit two or three people, each wearing a robe of tin white cloth and pounding on a drum or shaking an assan. Those with assan, they dance to the rhythm of the drums. In the middle of this frenzy of sound and of movement has been erected a potomi tent. This potomitan, it seems to reach to the sky. It is painted in bright color, and also are painted white letters forming words in an alphabet that I do not know. At the foot of the potomitan, over a small fire, hangs a small black cauldron. The content of the cauldron, they bubble over the edge and hiss on the flames. Next to the potomitan stand Macandal and Isabel. The poisoner and my beloved, they look magnificent, both dressed in ceremonial robe, hers white, his crimson. She stands straight and tall. She has never looked more enticing. She is a queen tonight. I look forward to our bed together after the ceremony, no? And then there is Macandal. He seems to glow with power. From a strap around his armless shoulder hangs a small leather bag filled with something I cannot see. His one hand, it holds a gleaming kubasa. But something is missing. The animal for the sacrifice. I look at Marcel and his birthmark of much ugliness. The Loa have marked him for the sacrifice. But did Macandal then know that we would bring the sacrifice ourselves? How could he know this? The events at the Maison de la Cour, they could not have been planned. They were a series of accidents, no? In my mind flashes the image of Macandal handing me to Kubasa. It seems like days or weeks ago, not mere hours. Somehow I knew why he handed it to me. Could he have known how I would use it? Franz, Patrice, and I, we hold Marcel at the edge of the circle of light and of drummers. Macandal beckons to us, and Franz shoves Marcel through the outer circle to the center. Marcel trips over his own feet and falls into a shallow hole in the ground right before Macandal. He holds his knees against his chest and trembles in a ball, but other than that, he does not dare to move. The drums, they are fast and loud. Isabel glides to the edge of the circle and holds out her hand to me. I take it, and she leads me through the ring of people and drums and a song and a fire to the side of Macandal. Macandal gestures to me and speaks to the crowd.
Listen, friends!
The drummers, they stop their drums. The only sound is the pop-pop of the flames of the torches and the whir of insects in the blackness that surrounds the ring of fire around the potomitan.
I had hoped the draught I had you to drink would free you to act thusly,
says the poisoner to me through his smile.
Very good. You've spilt blood for the red sect for the first time, but not the last.
His eyes look me up and down. His smile grows more wide. To the crowd, he says,
"Look at this man! Look at the blood that covers his skin and his clothes! Welcome him, friends! Welcome our friend Jean-Pierre Desperois to the Red Sect!"
The drums roll, and the crowd, it cheers. The torches spit flecks of flame into the blackness. Isabelle, she smiles at me.
"You must be hungry,"
says Mackendal. I nod.
"Eat, friend."
Isabelle is already at the kettle. She ladles the contents into a bowl made from a coconut shell. She places the steaming bowl and a spoon on the ground before me. I kneel and devour it, even though it is hot enough to burn my mouth. I've never tasted anything more delicious before. I did not realize until this very moment just how hungry I am. Mackendal, he speaks to the crowd.
"Look at how he eats. We do not need to press him. Friends, is he ready?"
The crowd, it responds at once. Mackendal, he stretches his hand toward me. His face, it beams.
"Please," he says, "the necklace."
I look up at his eyes. They are ice blue. His pupils are mere black points in a sea of blue. How strange it is for a black man to have eyes of such a color. How did I not notice this before? He beckons me to remain on my knees, and I do. I bow my head, and I feel his hands to lift the copper chain from the nape of my neck and the edge of my shoulders. My hands, they twitch. I feel an urge to grab it back. It takes all my power of will to control that urge, but now the necklace, it is gone. I look up to see the pendant dangling from the neck of Mackendal. Our moment of freedom, it is near. Mackendal raises his kubasa to the sky. The drums, they begin again. This time they beat faster, louder. As if in a dream, Isabelle picks up from the ground a cup of rotting liquid. She seems to float as she moves toward the white man Marcel, who is still in a ball in the shallow hole. She touches his shoulder with her finger and he sits up. The sound of the drums, it fills the air. The white man, he drinks. His shoulders relax, but then he begins to cough. He grabs his throat. He points to his open mouth. Mackendal and Isabelle, they watch him. They do not move, even as the drums, they grow more loud. He tries to breathe, but he cannot. His face, it turns red, now blue. He tries to stand, but his legs, they fail him. He makes no sound as he waves his arms for help. He collapses into a heap. He stops to move altogether, but the drums, they do not stop. Now, between the body of the white man and the pole of the Potomitain, Mackendal slides his knife back into his belt, and from the bag over his shoulder, he grabs a fistful of white powder. He walks with a purpose as he lets the powder slowly pour from his fist to the ground. His hand moves slowly, carefully. With the powder, he draws a veve. At first, it is unclear what the shape will be, but now it is revealed. The destroying sword of Saint-Michel. Why does the taste of salt return to my tongue? Mackendal pulls his kubasa back out of his belt. With the knife in his hand, he removes the necklace from his shoulders. It hangs from the chain in his fist. He holds it high so everyone can see. Even though the drums continue, the voice of Mackendal, it is as clear as if we were gathered in an empty room.
"This necklace contains the power for our freedom. It is a baka, a container for souls. It belongs to the son of Eloi, the son of Ediab Petwolwa, the son of the Loire, the crossroads, Legba!"
At the sound of the name of this most powerful Wa, the crowd, it cheers. I cheer with them. Mackendal stands directly above the prone body of Marcel, who emits a low moan. The baka, it dangles from his fist. The kubasa juts from his hand like a gleaming horn.
"With this baka, we take the souls of all who stand in our way. A man without a soul is an empty one. Together, we will build an army of empty ones.
The crowd, over the frenzy of the drums, bursts into a loud cheer. In a blur, Macandal swings his kubasaw toward the neck of the white man with a strange birthmark on his forehead, and blood spatters across the white powder of the veve. This slash, it is a work of art. There is a sound as if the wind blows back through time. The body of Marcel, it twitches once. The baka, it glows red. The drums grow more loud as the crowd roars. The baka, it works. Whose soul will be next? Isabel places the now empty coconut bowl under the bleeding neck of Marcel. The blood, it flows into the bowl, and within 5 seconds, the bowl, it is filled to overflowing, and the ground, it cannot absorb all the blood. But the body of Marcel, it still breathes, slowly and steadily. How can this be? The drums, they slow to a throb. The music, it seems to enter into the body of Isabel. First her arms, they jerk. Now her pelvis, it sways. Now her feet, they move. She dances with her eyes closed to the heartbeat of the drums. Solena, Solena, it is only now that I notice that Patrice and Franz hold me firm so I cannot move. All my attention, it is on Macandal, and only now do I realize that Patrice has tied my hands behind my back. Macandal picks up the frothing cup that Isabel made Marcel to drink. Behind Macandal, I see the boiling kettle of stew. The stew that I chose to eat. It is me. The sacrifice. It is me. I use all my strength to move away, but I am bound too tightly. Macandal holds the cup to my lips. I feel the hands of someone, Patrice, grab the hair on my head and to tip my head back. I force my mouth to be closed. I feel the liquid on my lips. I expect it to be hot, but it is ice cold. It makes my lips to be numb. My lips, I cannot keep them together. Some of the ice cold liquid goes into my mouth and some dribbles down my chin. It glides to the back of my throat, burning my tongue with its coldness. I cannot help but to swallow. It tastes different from the medicine he has given me before, more bitter. I feel its coldness like roots of a plant flow down my neck and through my chest. The circle of torches, the potomitain, the drummers, Macandal, Isabel, they spin around me. I hear a voice, the voice of Macandal. He shouts with a joy I have not heard from him before.
The Loire are on our side tonight!
It is hard to see clearly, as if a fog now descends over my eyes. My head, it is dizzy. My legs will not move. The hand of Patrice still grips my hair. Franz holds my right shoulder with one hand. In his other, he holds a knife. He looks at Macandal as if in wait for a signal. Macandal stands upright. His body seems somehow as if it grows. As if it grows as tall as the potomitain behind him. The battery of drums resounds. The chorus of acolytes sings. I know these chants. The ritual chants described in the Hungwenikon. The flicker of the torches lights the face of Macandal. He does not look human.
Friends,
he says to the group around him.
As you know, I had a vision. A vision of a man from another time who would bring a gift. I sacrificed the largest animal I could find, a bull, to the Loire to learn more. But it was not until we sacrificed the most powerful animal there is that we received our answer. It is this sacrifice, the sacrifice of men, that gives us the greatest gifts. The gift of second sight. The gift of this man who kneels before us now. The gift of what he brought with him.
This necklace is mine? Macandal raises the necklace, the baka, my baka, above his head.
When we sacrifice this man, The Loire will give us the greatest gift of all, the power to dominate our oppressors and take our cause from our small island to the rest of the world.
The crowd cheers. Macandal shouts to the sky.
In the name of Ba!
The crowd repeats these words. Macandal raises his hand to the crowd.
In the name of Dan!
The crowd again, it repeats what Macandal has said. Macandal looks at Franz. Franz lifts his blade. Macandal, his voice, it penetrates the blackness.
In the name of La!
The crowd echoes his words. The wind, as if called by magic, blows hard air through the trees, as if some force approaches us from every direction. Macandal pours powder in the sign of the cross on the ground. The wind, it blows out air, but somehow the cross, it stays. In a voice as loud as thunder, Macandal chants,
Ke'ekumalekba kujo!
The wind blows so strongly now that it overwhelms the drums. Macandal speaks,
Come to us, Legba Atimon!
The pendant around the neck of Macandal begins to glow red. The voice of Macandal cuts through the frantic noise.
Moses told the secrets of the Petwo Bakar to rabbis at Koheleth Adam. The Bakar contained the magic of the Black Kings, David and Solomon. Now that magic is ours.
Isabel, she dances toward the bowl at the neck of Tremblay. She lifts the bowl to her lips and drinks. Some of the contents spill from her lips and stain the front of her robe. Now, still dancing, she hands the bowl to a drummer in the circle. The bowl is now passed around the circle, and the members of the sect drink one by one. The smell of sulfur grows stronger and stronger. The robe of Isabel, it has fallen to the ground, but she is no longer Isabel. She is a large black wolf. After each one drinks, his robe falls to the ground, but instead of a naked person standing there, it is a large black wolf. The blood drips from its teeth, and it licks its snout with its red tongue. Now, the drumming has stopped, and the circle of drummers is now a circle of wolves. In the place of the sound of drums is the sound of the low rumble of a single hungry growl. There are four human, de Tremblay, who somehow still seems to breathe. Macandal, Franz with his knife ready to strike my throat, and me. Macandal, it points to me and speaks to the pack of wolves.
Devour the body of this man as the apostles devoured the body of their savior.
The wolves approach me from all sides. Their paws lift and fall as if time has slowed. Their voices merge in a single, terrifying growl. Macandal takes the bowl and drinks the remaining blood. Some of it drips from his mouth down the front of his red robe. The pendant around his neck emits a flash so blinding that I cannot see anything but blackness after. I cannot move, and my eyes, they struggle to adjust to the darkness. The wind blows at me from every direction with the force of a hurricane. The knife in the hand of Franz flies toward my throat. I feel myself lifted from the ground. Out of the corner of my eye, I see Franz fly through the air to smash against the trunk of a tree and fall limp. His knife clatters to the ground. I feel the force of the wind enter my mouth, my nose, my ears, my skin. I feel it to crush inside of me. I feel it to clutch at my heart. I feel my heart to be pulled. I cannot move. I cannot breathe. I feel my heart torn from its place in my chest. I open my mouth to scream, but no sound comes forth. Instead, a light of so much brightness that it makes the eyes barely able to see. This light explodes from my mouth. It illuminates the ground below me, the wolves, the body of the white man, still leaking blood. At the light, it's them, the wolves whimper and shrink back. The rushing sound in my ears, it is so loud, it hurts the inside of my head. I try to take a breath. There is no air in my chest. I cannot breathe. I cannot move. I have no heart. There is only air rushing out of me in the form of this white, hot light. The wolves lean back on their haunches in a circle. Now a sound.
It bursts forth from me. It is not my voice. It is the sound of thunder, of a lion, of a volcano. The flames of the torches blow out from the rush of noise and air from my voice. From the other side of the ocean, the sun begins to rise. The wolves howl and hiss. I open my mouth and the light shines at them. And where there was a wolf, now there is nothing. Where there were a pack of wolves, now there is black ash. The flames are everywhere. Where there were huts, there is only ash. The Poteau Mitin burns with a flame that rises like a shot straight into the sky. There is a sound so low that it makes my chest to shake. This sound, it comes from me. The light from my mouth illuminates the wolf who was Macandal directly below me, crouched over the body of the white man. Where the pendant touches his fur burns. Smoke rises from him. With his back paws, he tries to tear the necklace from around his neck, but he cannot grab it. He howls. The wolf next to him, the wolf who is Isabel, growls at him. She pushes at him with her snout, but he will not move. She howls as the tips of his fur glow like hot ash. The wolf who is Macandal tries to back away, but his paws are as if nailed to the ground. My voice mingles with his in a sound that evokes terror. But there is another sound, a sound from the forest, the sound of baying dogs and the voices of men, Frenchmen. As if it belongs to another, my hand reaches toward the wolf that was Macandal and snaps the chain that holds the baka. The wolf is gone. Before me now kneels the man. He begs for something, his life, perhaps. Isabel, still next to him, barks at him, owls, pushes him with her nose, but he does not move. She looks at me and snarls, but does not approach. She looks toward the sound of the approaching Frenchman. With a long, final howl, she bounds off into the woods away from the sound of men. The body of Tremblay, its neck perfectly slit, lies next to Macandal. Is the body still breathing? The baying of the dogs, the shouting of the men, they grow closer. What a prize for them to capture at last the one they call the poisoner. Now, in the air, through the smoke, a woman comes to me. Her head is covered, but her eyes glow from the shadow of her hood and veil. The eyes, they are the color of turquoise. She beckons to me. An orange light glows through the trees and makes the sky to be a deep pink, then purple, then blue. The smoke from the destruction before me forms a shadow. The shadow of my father. It grows huge. It blocks the sky. I feel a hand to grab mine. All is darkness.
You have been listening to Salt, The Lives and Times of Jean-Pierre d'Esperoir. I'm Jason Newlander, and I wrote and narrated the story. Buzz Moran produced this recording. Music by Adrian Quesada. There's more to Jean-Pierre d'Esperoir at theintergalacticnemesis.com. Salt is part of the One of Us podcast network.